The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into hour three. It is a delight to put together a unanimity of all my interests. One of my favorite people, Jeffrey Anderson. He is the president of the American Main Street Initiative. He was the director of the Bureau of Justice Statistics from 2017 to 2021, publishing in one of my favorite publications, the Claremont Review of Books, a really important book review, which is effectively really an essay, COVID Catastrophes, on a topic that I don't think we can talk about enough. Jeff, welcome back to the show. How you doing, man?
Oh, thank you, Seth. It's great to be on. I'm doing fine. Thanks. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. You have been writing about the COVID situation for a while now. I wrote early on, and every time I return to it, I'll tell you, I just get angrier and angrier. Your current essay, which is, as I say, it's a book review in the form of an essay primarily on one book by Joe Nocera and Bethany McLean, The Big Fail. How do you not get angry every time you dive back into this stuff?
Well, who says I don't? I
mean, okay. All right. Well, yeah. You're a man of great cheer and happiness. You know, you're I'm not. So no one can tell the difference with me. But OK.
I mean, I guess I do take pleasure in just sort of fighting the good fight. Yeah. You know, not everybody gets to live in a time when you're facing such crazy notions and there's a need to step up and actually stand up for what's right. It's like a little taste of living back in the American founding period or something, I guess.
We're certainly at a fulcrum point, aren't we? It's going to go, or a house divided point. We're going to go all one way or all the other. That's my sense. Let's walk through your essay, your book review, if we can. COVID Catastrophes, current issue of the Claremont Review of Books, claremontreviewofbooks.com. People can access it. Almost every paragraph has something really important in it that you wrote. But I guess let's start at the beginning. Jeff, a lot of us had this intuition early on. You quote the authors in this book quote a doctor early on in the pandemic who says, is what I'm reading actually coming from the CDC or is it politically motivated? You say the answer to that is yes, both.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it was apparent quite early that the CDC and the public health establishment, which they're supposed to be these unbiased experts who are not politically motivated. I mean, they were clearly politically motivated. They had an agenda. They were desperate to appear to be useful. You know, as I've often said, public health officials love public health interventions.
Yeah.
Anything they can come up with. The masks were one of the best examples of that early on. And I think this doctor was naive in asking whether it was asking as if it were an either or question. It was both.
Yeah, you know, I sometimes get the sense that we've absorbed and adopted enough of an understanding that the mediation efforts were a failure, such that, you know, I don't know if you saw the interaction, let's say, between Dr. Phil McGraw and the ladies on The View about a week ago when he kind of shut them down. And the studio applauded, a studio which is inclined to be with the ladies on The View, applauded him shutting them down on how bad the school closings and the business closings were. And it made me think, OK, maybe we've turned a corner and we've learned from this. But then you still read some of this stuff and you walk away with certain conclusions that all of this might have still been a trial run. Jeff, do you have a sense if there's another pandemic, if there's another thing that is labeled a pandemic, if there's another kind of public health crisis that is labeled existential, we might go in this direction again? Have we learned anything?
Well, I don't think there's any question that the public health establishment will try to take us down the same road. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. The encouraging thing is that having had a trial run of sorts, there are an awful lot of people, I think, who are much much more confident in their willingness to stand up against that, say, no, we're not going to defer to you so-called experts. You know, it's encouraging to hear that from The View. I mean, I hadn't seen that, actually, but that's good to hear that was the response.
Yeah.
I think there were a lot of people there were people, you know, on either side of the political divide who certainly were quite frustrated with aspects of this. I do think the school closure part of it definitely crossed party lines. And so hopefully you have a citizenry that's better prepared to not just take marching orders from these so-called experts. I'm pretty confident that's the case, but they will absolutely try it again. It doesn't even have to be a pandemic, I don't think.
No, it doesn't have to be a pandemic. It could be almost anything declared an emergency. I thought maybe we might see it with regard to environmentalist issues or something like that next. But, you know, let's just walk through a few different aspects of this if we can. Let's start with Dr. Anthony Fauci. So, you know, I thought I studied this stuff as much as anyone, but until I read your review, I didn't know he wasn't an epidemiologist. I had no idea. I thought he was sold to us as an epidemiologist. He's not an epidemiologist. This is new information to me.
Yeah, that was well hidden, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, and as Scott Atlas points out, the real problem is not that he wasn't an epidemiologist, but rather that he was not a health policy expert.
Right.
He was not somebody who by profession is trained to weigh the pros and cons of actions. He was just a career bureaucrat, and but it is amazing. Like he became very quickly the press's favorite son, and there was no shaking their sense of that as things progressed.
Amazon has, I mean, Polk Publishers did books for children about Anthony Fauci, America's Doctor, How to Be Like Anthony Fauci. What I don't understand, Jeff, I got to say, from the very get-go, the guy was lying to us. I mean, from the very beginning, there's the famous interview with NBC where he says masks aren't effective, and then he turns on a dime over that issue, only to later explain that he was lying to us about the reasons he said they weren't effective because it was so immediately right off the bat, we know we have someone who's willing to exploit his public health expertise or his medicinal or medical expertise to lie. And then over the course of the year 2020, we learned about more lies, including what he said about the changing herd numbers that would be required for herd immunity. The New York Times called him out on that, frankly. I was surprised to see they did it, but they did at the end of the year of 2020. He said that we would not be seeing a vaccine within a couple of years. That wasn't true. Why do they keep going back to someone who literally lied to the American public more than once? I didn't understand that at all, Jeff.
Well, he was saying what the press wanted to hear.
Okay.
I agree. It's incredible. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen anybody who had a looser connection to the truth than this guy. I mean, he just there's no love of truth in him. I don't think there's any actual serious intellectual inquisitiveness. He's all about power. He loves the spotlight and the TV cameras. I mean, it's just. And for that very reason, I actually think this is the first thing I've written, and as you've noted, I've written a lot on this COVID stuff, and I believe, I'm not completely sure, but I think this is the first time I've written his name in a piece because I didn't want to give him any added publicity.
Oh, interesting.
But
interesting.
In this case, it was important to go through and see, like, who was pulling the strings behind the scenes, and he obviously was not doing anything other than saying what the press wanted to hear at any given moment. He could say, you know, black one day, white the next.
Yeah, you
and
bet.
As long as he said what they wanted to hear, they would laud him. And I think that's unfortunately your explanation is that the press didn't care if he was telling the truth. They cared that he said what they wanted to hear at any given moment. Maybe because it contradicted Trump, but they liked that. Maybe because they just wanted to believe that somebody could do something about the virus. You know, there's always this belief on the progressive left that you can control everything, that you can control nature. So you have to be able to control the virus. I mean, otherwise, their whole political philosophy starts to fall apart.
You put your finger on an interesting point here. Maybe it was because he contradicted Trump. And maybe we can pick – I have to take a quick commercial break. Maybe we can pick up on this part of it on the other side of it. Can we talk about the politicalization of COVID and its use during an election year?
Sure.
Because this is an ineluctable fact of what was said about COVID and the way people reacted to COVID in an otherwise very successful time in America. It's amazing how we went from sunlight to Stygian darkness within the snap of a fingers. And I couldn't, as one, help but think there was a political point to this. Jeff Anderson is my guest. You want to read his essay review of it's a book review, but it's an essay, COVID Catastrophes in the Claremont Review of Books. You can get it at claremontreviewofbooks.com. Jeff Anderson is the president of the American Main Street Initiative, and he and I will be right back. Jeffrey H. Anderson. Jeff Anderson, he's the president of the American Main Street Initiative, former director of the Bureau of Justice Statistics at the Department, U.S. Department of Justice. Essay book review, COVID Catastrophes in the current issue of the Claremont Review of Books. It's a phenomenal review, folks, of the years 2020 to 2022-23, covering all aspects of everything that brought us so much angst. Jeff, if I can we focus on, I suppose, the unprovable, but to me, unavoidable conclusion that COVID became one of these other things that really shouldn't be politicized, you know, but it seemed to me that there was a deliberate effort to kind of take an America that was doing really well to turn it into a sick society and to blame it on Donald Trump. First, it was his racism for, you know, saying where it came from as being from China. You had the asininity of the mayor of New York and Nancy Pelosi going to their Chinatowns to say no, you know, come out and congregate. Then that was before they decided that congregate settings were bad ideas. You couldn't do congregate settings unless, of course, it was on behalf of Black Lives Matter, which Anthony Fauci, in front of the House of Representatives, refused to denounce, even when he was denouncing congregate settings. There seemed to be, along with the masks, this concept that we are to be afraid of one another. We are a sick society. We are a failing country. When we were doing so well, I just couldn't help but think that this was politically directed towards November.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was. I mean, I think there was also sort of genuine fear and even panic on a lot of people's parts. But I don't think there's much question that, like, I mean, you mentioned the masks, and once President Trump said he wouldn't be wearing a mask, then almost everybody on the left decided, oh, well, then I certainly will wear a mask.
Yeah.
Now it's sort of a political symbol. It's
yep.
like wearing a Black Lives Matter flag on your face.
Right.
I think that was unquestionably true. I'm sure there were people who figured out very quickly that whereas Trump looked like he was probably cruising toward re-election, no sure thing, but he was in pretty good shape in January or so of 2020. Once COVID hit, the whole dynamic changed, and I'm sure there were people who thought that was very much to their advantage on the left. I think there were a lot of politics in play on this, both in terms of like actual electoral politics and just sort of the agenda of let's train the citizenry to abide by experts' decrees and the whole thing that's a little hard to sort of express exactly why it's so disturbing to see a bunch of people walking around wearing masks, aside from the obvious massive decline in the quality of human social interaction. But there's also something disturbing about citizens in a republic who cover their faces
yep.
and don't look at all like
yep.
individual men and women with certain unalienable rights, but rather look like faceless stormtroopers. And that's how a lot of people, I think, of an authoritarian mindset like it. And so I think things were politicized in that sort of way as well.
You know, the other part that drives me so crazy about this, we'll get to some of the other remediation efforts and the shutdowns, but let's take it from the 50,000-foot view. You quote, as I think one of the authors, maybe it was Nocera and McLean, quote, one Donald Henderson, who used to be the head of the World Health Organization, who was on record as saying, quote, experience has shown that communities faced with epidemics or other adverse events respond best and with the least anxiety when the normal social functioning of the community is least disrupted. We did exactly 180 degrees opposite of that sentiment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what was so radical about it, is that I think everybody knew that it's better to have things go on in a non-disrupted kind of way. And yet, all of a sudden, we just departed from that so dramatically. And we seem to follow the lead of communist China in doing so.
Right.
They locked down Wuhan, and then Italy decided to follow the communist example. And then, you know, unfortunately, so did the rest of the world. So I think Henderson was offering this sort of time-honored counsel. We've seen this in other contexts, of course, like FDR being insistent on Major League Baseball continuing throughout World War
II.
Sure. Even though a lot of the best players weren't playing anymore, they were off and doing various aspects of the fighting. But yeah. We had the games. Even back in 1918, when we had the Spanish flu, which was so much worse than COVID-19, night and day, we had people in the prime of life, in their 20s and 30s, being killed off sort of disproportionately and leaving orphans in their wake. And yet, very few things were canceled. You know, you still had, for the most part, things going on as usual. And, you know, and this is even during World War II. So, we're sorry, World War One.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure.
And, yeah, so, you know, I think if people had sort of just gone about living their normal lives with a great deal of extra protections being given to people, say, in nursing homes, who are very vulnerable, then it would have been a lot better situation all around. There was really no need to ever shut down schools or force kids to wear masks in schools. I mean, you could understand it perhaps for a few weeks while people kind of got their wits about them, but it never should have happened after that. And but we kind of knew this, as you highlight.
And it didn't take that long. I mean, I think it was Heather McDonald who said to me on this show some time ago, almost everything we really needed to know about COVID, we pretty much knew by May or June of 2020.
Yeah, that's pretty true. And a lot of it, that's right. I mean, so in a lot of these things, we actually even knew before COVID, like the whole matter of whether masks work.
Right.
We'd done all these randomized controlled trials, and they had repeatedly shown that there was no evidence masks did anything to stop the spread of viruses. And yet we just threw all that out the window when we decided, oh, we must be able to show we can do something. And then there was this bizarre about face on masks, where one day the Surgeon General is saying, don't wear a mask, it could be even counterproductive.
Yep.
And then the next it's, oh, everyone must wear a mask.
Yep. It's your patriotic duty. It's your patriotic
right.
duty. I'll never forget Joe Biden three times waving that thing around against every instruction on how to use a mask properly, saying it's your patriotic duty to wear the mask and to protect your fellow Americans. I think, too, the store was given away on the politicalization of it during the debates between Biden and Trump, the final one, where Joe Biden said anyone responsible for 220,000 deaths no longer deserves to be president. And then Joe Biden, of course, presided over about three times that number. I guess you don't trouble the poor with begging here, and asking Joe Biden to be accountable would be a totally vain thing to do at this point. But let me talk about some of the closures more granularly with you on the other side of the break, if I can. I want to talk about businesses. You get into what took place in California. I'd like to talk to you about the schools, too. And I'd like to get your sense what you ultimately conclude about the timing of the announcement of the vaccine. You got a little more time for me, Jeff Anderson?
Oh, certainly.
Thank you, sir. Jeff and I will be right back. His piece, Critical Reading, COVID Catastrophes, at the Claremont Review of Books, claremontreviewofbooks.com. Jeff Anderson, the head of the American Main Street Initiative, a think tank for everyday Americans. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. We're talking with Jeffrey Anderson. Jeff Anderson has an important essay in the Claremont Review of Books. It's in the form of a book review, COVID Catastrophes. I want to talk about the business shutdowns with you for a second, if I might, Jeff. The numbers are staggering. 40,000 small businesses close in California, half of them permanently, 6,000 in New York City. unbelievable. Does that ever get recovered from, if that's an English sentence?
No, I don't think so. Not those specific businesses, at least. And it's going to be a long time before, if we ever get back to the point where there's as many of these individually owned businesses as there were, it's going to be quite some time. This was the last thing our economy needed, of course, was to have more of the market taken over by these giant corporate behemoths at the expense of the mom and pop restaurants or stores. It would have been nice if it had disproportionately hit the corporate giants and spared the more mom and pop places, I think. But that was not at all what happened. And the federal government just totally botched the response to it, as the federal government pretty much always will in these sorts of circumstances. A lot of the money that was sent out to protect these small, to save these small businesses, which was necessary because the government had forced these lockdowns and business closures. So when you're a business and you're not allowed to sell your product, the least the government can do is provide some money. But a lot of it didn't really end up in the right hands.
The LA Lakers got millions, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, right. The Lakers got $4.6 million.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so it was a major loss. The 6,000 stores and restaurants permanently closed in New York City is really just an astounding number.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And what's interesting to me now, if I can use that as a bit of a segue into some of these other ancillary downwashes from the COVID shutdowns and lockdowns, when Donald Trump was inaugurated in 2017, this country was kind of getting its hands and arms around this concept of deaths of despair, suicides, drug abuse, alcoholism, that kind of stuff. So we learn during COVID that there are exacerbational factors. If you are elderly, of course, you're more susceptible. If you're obese, you're more susceptible. If you have other, perhaps, comorbidities. But those were the two key ones. So what did we do? We shut down gyms. We shut down outdoor parks. We shut down outdoor family gatherings. We shut down churches. We shut down synagogues. We shut down 12-step meetings. And when we shut down businesses, one of the greatest predictors, Jeff, you probably are aware of this given your work at the Department of Justice, one of the greatest predictors of relapse is economic loss and, of course, family anxieties as well. But we shut all of that. Anywhere anyone would go for a little emotional, social, or religious relief, the kinds of things that, you know, government really can't do a very good job at, we closed those down too. Every gate of reprieve was locked down.
Yeah, it was just so backwards. You had beaches closed. And one of my favorites was locked up tennis courts.
Yeah.
How are you possibly going to get COVID from playing tennis with somebody?
Right.
It was amazing. And we acted as if the free exercise of religion were not a protection in our Constitution.
Correct.
The courts were sort of AWOL on that. You, of course, had lots of executives playing king for a day, which
yep.
is one of the big lessons of all this. It should be a reminder we need to have legislatures deciding what the law is and not executives just decreeing quasi-law. I really did think the closure of churches was particularly appalling. And a lot of churches, unfortunately, were more than happy to go along with it.
Yes, you bet.
There wasn't a lot of pushback like there should have been. All of this is just terrible for quality of life and morale. Anything that one would call like a Tocquevillian civil association of any sort was basically put a stop to. And so as a result, as Tocqueville argued, when you don't have these community groups and gatherings, it lends itself to more centralized power, which is what a lot of people unfortunately wanted. And so it was a nightmare, especially I was fortunate enough to be married and have a couple of kids. And my niece was actually a college student and she came to live with us when her college shut down and she was doing classes remotely. So we had some social interaction and we had a church that was actually stayed open. But boy, if I had been, I felt so badly for people who were, say, single people trapped in an apartment. The fact that you had the high levels of alcohol use and everything, not at all surprising.
No, no. Let me take a quick break. This is a quick segment. We'll be right back with more from Jeff Anderson.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, coming to you from the 960 Patriot Broadcast Studio, which is brought to you by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metals. Jeffrey H. Anderson is my guest, president of the American Main Street Initiative, former director of the Bureau of Justice Statistics at the U.S. Department of Justice. We're talking about his piece in the Claremont Review of Books, claremontreviewofbooks.com. COVID catastrophes. Let's talk about the kids, Jeff. Let's talk about the kids. So the justification for closing schools was another moving target as I look back at it. At first, it was that we've got to save the kids. Then we learned that children were actually not that vulnerable. What we had to do was save the teachers. Then we realized, well, you know, there are ways to kind of have other people come in or monitor the classroom. So then the justification became that the kids would take the virus home and kill grandma and grandpa. Aside from putting the fear of Hades into these kids, which is an unhealthy thing to do in and of themselves, or pitting the kids against one another, which went on rampantly, you know, is your family doing this? Is your family doing that? I can't play with that family because they're not doing this. I can't play with that family because they're not doing that. Aside from no after-school programs, and aside from no longer monitoring for physical abuse, we send the kids home. These kids were not affected by COVID. I know a lot of people. I don't know any kids that live with their grandparents. I'm sure there is a subpopulation that does, and in that subpopulation, maybe you could make special efforts. But we lost, Jeff, we lost more young people under the age of 17 every single year. We lost more people under the age of 17 to drug overdose deaths than the entirety of people under 17 during COVID.
Yeah, yeah. The kids got the worst of it. And COVID, by its nature, spared kids. That was one of the, you know, one of the best things about it was that it was pretty brutal for people who were 90 some years old and in ill health, but or anywhere near that. But for kids, it was really like the flu. You look at the stats, and it was actually very similar to the effects of flu. Some people think that's, you know, they recoil when you say that, but that's what is reflected in the stats from the CDC. And yet, we made sure they got the worst of it in terms of public policy. They were the last ones that still had to wear masks. I just found it so appalling. You'd see like a family walking down the road, and the parents are no longer wearing masks, but their 3-year-old is.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, just and like I remember going out. My son was playing baseball in 2021 in the spring, and every other boy on the field in Little League was wearing a mask while playing baseball, yeah. Which is certainly not the safest thing in the world, as it affects your vision and, you know, peripheral vision, what have you. And he was the only one not wearing one. They were the loss of education. It would have been really horrible if our public schools actually taught much that was worthwhile and
right.
Lost, you know, all this time. But I guess that was one saving grace. There's an example in the piece about Jay Bhattacharya brought up that he saw a picture in the newspaper where it showed a couple of maybe second graders sitting outside a Taco Bell with their laptops and trying to pick up free Wi-Fi because that's the only place they could get it in the middle of the day while their parents were off at work. This is like the picture of how we treated relatively small children under COVID. It really was so unfair to kids.
Yes, not only was it unfair, I think there's going to be from now, as far as the eye can see, a youth mental health crisis that we have unleashed on this. Even the CDC has put out a study that sexual violence, suicidal thoughts, suicidal behavior, and other mental mental health effects have affected our children in ways that, if I can quote Kathleen Ethier, the director of the CDC's Adolescent and School Health Division, a crisis.
Right. I'm there. When you tell, it's different at different ages. I feel so badly for the babies who didn't get to see people's faces,
right.
And their speech skills didn't develop as they should. But also you had people who are like 12, 13, 14 years old going through a pretty awkward time in their development and not being able to interact normally with their peers and with other human beings. That's not good for anybody. This was just down the line. It was really horrendous the way we the way we treated kids, and we taught them to be so fearful.
Yep.
And like, we're supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Yeah.
And yet, rather than saying let's be courageous and yet prudent about all this, we taught them to be cowardly and sort of celebrated that as a virtue.
And afraid of one another. Afraid of one another.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, afraid of one another. Yeah. You walk down the street, people give you a sideways glance,
right.
Like you're.
Or they would cross the street. Yeah.
Yeah, my wife and I during that period really enjoyed watching Westerns to watch people face actual hardship with courage, as opposed to mostly manufactured hardship with cowardice.
Yeah, a place we once called America. The censorship thing was interesting, too. So I was given monologues on this, doing the data, Jeff, nothing irresponsible. And after a while, and they were being, you'll like this, they were being rebroadcast on YouTube for a while. And then YouTube stopped, and they started censoring me. And it took forever for our general manager to get in touch with an official at YouTube who said, well, the policy, YouTube, is any discussions on COVID have to come from a government source. So, I don't know if you knew this person or not. I called one Eleanor McCants Katz. She was the Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services. Government source. Senate confirmed. I had her on. Oh, by the way, a psychiatrist and epidemiologist. Okay?
Okay.
Double certified. And I had her on to talk about the importance of keeping the schools open or to reopen the schools. YouTube silenced it because she wasn't a government source that they agreed with. That's what it was about.
Right. Well, I wrote an article in the summer of 2020 for City Journal called Do Masks Work?
I remember.
Rand Paul tweeted it out. Yeah,
yep.
I think we talked about it on the show.
I think you were on the show about it. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's probably the most read article I've ever written and most widely read. And it got taken down by LinkedIn, of all places. It just disappeared.
Right. Jeff, I only have about 50 seconds left. What's your assessment of the timing of the announcement of the vaccine after the election? Do you think there were shenanigans going on there?
Well, anytime there's an announcement of a major policy development, like we've developed a vaccine that comes in 6 days after the presidential election, you have to be pretty suspicious of the timing on that. I think it's the circumstantial evidence is a little too strong for my taste that was, I think, almost certainly held back because there were a lot of people, including probably Pfizer, Moderna, et cetera, who didn't really want to have the announcement on the eve of the election and benefit Trump.
Yeah. Which it very clearly would have. Well, thank you for benefiting us with your time and your scholarship, Jeff Anderson. I love having you on. Thank you for this essay. Let me plug it one more time. ClaremontReviewOfBooks.com, Jeffrey Anderson, COVID Catastrophes. Sir, thank you. Portions of this show brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They have a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio that really invests in you. You can have peace of mind. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. There are absolutely no fees with YRefi. Of course, you can turn your income on or off, compound it, whatever you like. You get a monthly statement with no surprises. And best of all, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call them at 888-YREFI-24, 888-YREFI-24. Just after the interview, Jeff made me a very happy man. He said, you're a great interviewer, Seth, but I really like your bumper music. Yes, that's anyone who says they like my bumper music makes me a happy man. When we learn these things, what we've learned about COVID, the thing is not to forget the lesson. The truth is we've had this lesson for many long decades. In 1948, speaking about how to live with the atomic bomb, C.S. Lewis wrote, "We think a great deal too much of the atomic bomb, as in how are we to live in an atomic age? I am tempted to reply, why, as you would have lived in the 16th century when the plague visited London almost every year, or as you would have lived in a Viking age when raiders from Scandinavia might land and cut your throat any night, or indeed as you are already living in an age of cancer, an age of syphilis, an age of paralysis, an age of air raids, an age of railway accidents, and an age of motor accidents. In other words, do not let us begin by exaggerating the novelty of our situation. You and all whom you love were already sentenced to death before there was ever an atomic bomb. And quite a high percentage of us were going to die in unpleasant ways. We had indeed one very great advantage over our ancestors, anesthetics, but we have that still. It is ridiculous to go about whimpering and drawing long faces because the scientists have added one more chance of a premature death to a world which already bristled with such chances and in which death itself was not a chance at all but a certainty. This is the first point to be made, he said, and the first action to be taken is to pull yourselves together. If we are all going to be destroyed by an atomic bomb, let that bomb, when it comes, find us doing sensible and human things, praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music, bathing the children, playing tennis, chatting to our friends over a pint and a game of darts, not huddled together like frightened sheep thinking about death. They may break our bodies, bombs. Microbes can do that too. But they need not dominate our minds. Can we learn that once and for all and say to what we went through 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, never again? Young David, thank you. Mr. Bill, thank you. All of you, thank you. Until tomorrow, I'm Seth Leibson. God bless you. And class dismissed.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.